You spend a third of your life in bed. That's why we make the most comfortable sheets in the very best way. I'm Scott Tannen. 8 years ago, my wife Missy and I founded Boll & Branch to create the new standard in bedding. We source pure organic cotton and put workers' rights first. Today, Boll & Branch makes the highest quality sheets in the entire industry. You'll feel the difference of our famous signature sheets. They're made from pure organic cotton and get softer with every single wash. Now's the perfect time to try Boll & Branch sheets, pillows, bath towels, and so much more. Each is made with super soft organic cotton by workers who are paid fairly and have come to feel like family. It's time to make the better choice and get the new standard in bedding. Visit BollandBranch.com today for free shipping and returns.
Experience the best sheets you've ever felt at BollandBranch.com and get 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code DREAMS. That's BollandBranch.com. Promo code DREAMS.
Folks, joining us this hour is Kent Satterley, Executive Director of the Gulf Offshore Research Institute. And questions asked as to whether or not offshore platforms in the Gulf of Mexico can be repurposed for other activities, such as renewable energy or aquaculture. A couple of the regulatory authorities inside of the Department of Interior seem to be at odds on whether or not that's a possibility or not. The Bureau of Offshore Energy Management and the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. And we've actually had representatives from both of those agencies on the show over the past several years. And let's welcome Kent Satterley. Kent, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. It's nice to be here with you.
Thank you, sir. So let me ask you, this issue comes up, I guess, because the BSEE has set out to decommission, a lot of the blue water platforms that are out in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, that's correct, Newell. By law, those platforms have to be removed when they are no longer producing oil and gas. However, the Energy Policy Act of 2005, in a sense, superseded that by providing for those platforms to be reused for other marine purposes. And so as we move into that and we find that there are a multitude of uses, particularly with offshore renewable energy coming to stage and the priority of the current administration, those two agencies in the federal government don't seem to be synced up.
So I know, at an all-time high, there were thousands of platforms out there. Do you have any ideas to the inventory and what's available?
I do, Newell. And I started my career with Shell back in the early 80s, and at that time, there were many platforms that were being put in on the shelf. You know, that's more the shallow water area. I was fortunate enough to be involved in that and helping to design and fabricate and install some of those platforms. At one time, back in the probably the 90s, there were as many as 4,000 of those platforms out there producing a lot of oil and gas for our nation and benefiting the state of Louisiana. Now we're down to fewer than 1,800 of the platforms, and there are about 175 being removed every year. So what we're trying to do in the Gulf Offshore Research Institute is research what are the alternate uses for these platforms and how important are the platforms ecologically to the Gulf of Mexico and the state of Louisiana.
Well, I know that when I go tie my boat up to one of those platforms, I catch more fish than when I'm not tied up to a platform. There's nothing scientific about that. I could just tell you what my experience has been in a real sense. My daily catch is a lot greater at a platform than when I'm not at a platform.
That's so true, Newell. And I'm a scuba diver, so I have firsthand knowledge down below the water. I've dove on many of those platforms, and I've seen the fish that you have caught.
Absolutely. So what is the rub here? I mean, I do understand that obviously we have a lot of pipeline that's running underneath there, and obviously there's reefs, there's all kinds of underwater considerations that the federal government is looking at. Is there a resistance to looking at, other realistic uses of this infrastructure? And that's what it is. It's infrastructure that's out there that instead of decommissioning and removing, what you're saying is that we might be smarter if we can figure out another purpose that helps society at large.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I like the term that you use, infrastructure. As you know, the federal government is looking at an infrastructure bill right now, and certainly the infrastructure in the Gulf of Mexico can be considered part of that infrastructure. The oil and gas companies over the last several decades have spent hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to put these platforms in, and they have produced buku amounts of oil and gas. Now, as you know, the oil and gas development is moving further offshore. So we still have a thriving industry there. But now that some of these shallower platforms are being depleted, the platforms are there and the pipelines are there. So what we're looking at, and this is, I think, particularly relevant because the Biden administration just recently has announced this year that all of its energy and climate policies and how important the offshore is, that the Biden announced that they wanted to get 30 gigawatts of wind power by 2030, which is really a moonshot effort. So let's try to use all the opportunities that we have, including the infrastructure in the Gulf of Mexico.
I mean, are you thinking that there's a possibility that some of these larger platforms could be the central point of operations for these wind fields and possibly transmission lines actually being placed in some of pipeline that's already underneath the ocean's bed?
Well, what we're looking at, Newell, is, first of all, the BOEM, or the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, completed a study last year that showed that the Gulf of Mexico was a very good region for wind energy. And they just released several weeks ago a request for information asking for areas of the Gulf of Mexico that ought to be leased for wind energy. So the power is out there. There's no question about that. And you're asking about the platforms. We are looking at opportunities to take wind power, and then which might not be located on the platforms, they might be adjacent to the platforms,
right.
But then to run that power back to the platforms and then convert that to hydrogen through a process called electrolysis, and then potentially put the hydrogen in the pipelines that are there and bring that back to shore.
So a lot more scientific than I was thinking about, but nonetheless, being able to use that infrastructure. Would it not also allow us to get from point A to point B faster? I mean, if you don't have to go out there and build that infrastructure and there is an alternative use, it seems to me a lot of folks would be really interested in that because we might be able to get to the end game quicker.
I think you're right. Those platforms take a long time to design and build and install, and now the environmental regulations are more stringent, so that adds time to the equation. So, yeah, let's try to take full advantage of what we've got out there.
Yeah. You also talk about aquaculture, and I want to spend a little time talking about that. We got to get to a break. When we come back, we're visiting with Kent Satterley, Executive Director of the Gulf Offshore Research Institute. We're talking about whether or not there's an alternative methodology that we ought to be deploying instead of decommissioning all of these platforms, is repurposing these platforms for other uses. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. We are back. We're visiting with Kent Satterley, Executive Director of the Gulf Offshore Research Institute. His organization looks at platforms as important assets and thinks of it as infrastructure. Others think of it as junk. Kent, when we look at the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, they have their Rigs to Reefs proposal where a number of rigs have either been moved to create these reefs? Are they allowed to stay in place? Has there been a philosophical or ideological change of heart as to the perpetuation of that program? Sean, okay. All right. We're going to try and get Kent Satterley back on the phone. I think we lost Kent, and we'll try and make sure that we get him back. Kent had pointed out that Congress had passed the Energy Policy Act of 2005, 16 years ago, which was a comprehensive energy bill, making the U.S. energy independent. And that law kind of forged the way for offshore renewable energy. So we just spent a little time talking about some of the opportunities that we have there as to use these platforms as centers of operation for wind energy or otherwise. We are about to get into the conversation of aquaculture. One of the things that they have been considering is that endeavor. So, Ken, before I lost you, I was asking the question. I understand that the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement has had rigs to reefs program, and I'm curious: has there been a change of heart in this organization relative to that program?
No, Newell. The Rigs to Reef program has been around for a long time, and it's really a very good program. And in fact, we believe that all the other areas in the world that have offshore platforms should adopt the same thing, including the West Coast, where several of their platforms need to be removed. That's still a strongly supported program. However, not all the platforms have been reefed for various reasons. And what we're looking at is whether the platforms can remain standing and continue to function as artificial reefs, but also be used for other purposes. What's been happening is BSEE, we call them BSEE, has been issuing orders for companies to remove the platforms because oil and gas production has ceased. And we've been working with our congressional members to get some language put in the appropriations bill to put a pause on those orders if the company will volunteer for the Rigs to Reef program and until the Department of Interior completes a study to look at what are the alternative uses for those platforms.
So when we talk about, you know, keeping the reefs and standing in place, is there any consideration to the sports fishermen? I mean, you and I were kidding earlier. You're a diver. I've dived, out there amongst the rigs for a number of years earlier in life, but fish there extensively. Is there any consideration for sports fishing?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, our board president is the son of the man who founded the Coastal Conservation Association. So we work very closely with CCA, and we get their advice on how we can move forward. But these, as you mentioned, the platforms are, dearly loved by the fishermen. And of course, they're able to provide a lot of the seafood that our local restaurants use and we all enjoy.
Well, when I meant, consideration, I was thinking of BSEE. Do they take that under consideration before they decommission and just, tear down these platforms?
You know, that's a really good question, Newell. The federal government is a very big organization, and sometimes it seems like their different missions conflict, almost like an internal tug of war, so to speak, where you've got one agency within the Department of Interior, which is BOEM, that's looking at these alternative uses, and you've got another agency called BSEE, which is tasked with getting the platforms removed, and they call it their Idle Iron Program. And what we're trying to do is to get those two agencies to talk. And we believe that the department, the secretary of the Department of Interior needs to step in and say, okay, guys, let's try to figure this thing out. We know what the benefits of these platforms are. They've been providing benefits to the Gulf of Mexico and the state for a long time. Now let's figure out what is the best purposes for these platforms.
Who's paying the bill now to tear these platforms down? Is that a fund that's generated by the oil companies, or is that taxpayer money that's doing so?
No, it's being paid for by the oil companies that have title and own the platforms. And as you probably know, what's happened over the years is the major companies that put the platforms in have sold these platforms to the smaller operators so that the larger operators can go further offshore. And some of these smaller operators don't have the financial wherewithal or may not have it to remove the platform. So what's happening is that process has been slowed down, and now BSEE is issuing orders not only to the smaller companies but also to the companies that put the platforms in. So, you know, it may be reaching a crisis, but we feel like there's a much better approach.
Now, you guys also say that there's an opportunity to use this infrastructure in the assistance of fostering aquaculture out in the Gulf of Mexico. We've seen it done in a number of other countries around the world, not so much here. What's your thought process there?
Well, the first thing, Newell, is that we have to recognize, maybe not everybody realizes this, particularly those people that live in our area, because our seafood is so plentiful. But the U.S. imports about 80 to 85% of its seafood, and a lot of that seafood comes from places like China and other places that don't necessarily have the same kind of environmental and health standards that we have. So we believe that through offshore aquaculture, the United States, and in particular Louisiana and Texas, because of our proximity to the Gulf of Mexico, can become leaders and the U.S. becoming a net exporter of seafood instead of a net importer.
And they would do so how? I mean, these platforms would help foster this in what fashion?
Well, there are technologies available now that were not available years ago. You know, when you think about the aquaculture that's going on, for example, in Norway around the fjords, they have very calm waters there that are very suited for offshore aquaculture. The Gulf of Mexico, on the other hand, is prone to storms and hurricanes and so forth. It can be a very hostile environment. But there are technologies that are available now where these net pens that the fish are raised in can be submerged below the water surface when a hurricane comes and avoid any kind of damage to the net pens. And you've got very good quality water in the Gulf of Mexico that are really well suited for offshore aquaculture.
Did I read this somewhere that they were saying one of the benefits is that it could help reverse the dead zone process that's immediately offshore the coast of Louisiana by the growth of certain foods that are utilized in aquaculture?
Well, as you probably know, Newell, the reason why we have the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico is because of all the nitrogen that comes into the Gulf of Mexico from the Mississippi River, from the upriver farming that occurs. And, you know, they are trying to deal with that upriver. But if we can find ways that can beneficially use that nitrogen offshore, yeah, I think we can at least put a dent in it. And, you know, when you think about it, macroalgae or kelp is an up-and-coming technology, and kelp needs nitrogen to grow. So there's a nice synergy there.
And are these things that the federal government and these regulatory agencies, they're not really thinking in this context? Is that part of the issue, or are there, is there an environmental concern that people are trying to steer them away from these opportunities?
I think what it is, Newell, is you've got one department or one agency of the federal government that has a mission to get these platforms removed. And, you know, understandably, they don't want the burden to fall on the taxpayer. And, you know, we certainly support that. But then you've got other agencies that are pushing hard to get renewable energy, to get offshore aquaculture, to get offshore kelp growth. And, for example, the Department of Energy believes that perhaps 10% of our transportation fuels can be produced from macroalgae or kelp growth. You know, so the potential is huge. And the federal government just doesn't seem to have its act together in terms of making that happen.
Yeah. It just seems that there's so much synergy that we've discussed in other ways of the service industry to win alternative, you know, fuel resources, and it, that we should go, in stealing this term from a movie, the full Monty, right? Look at it all. I mean, I get the sense as I was reading some of the stuff that you guys have, we're selling ourselves short in many respects.
Well, we are, and something that we haven't really mentioned, but we should, is we've got an offshore oil and gas industry, which is stationed in Louisiana and Texas, that has done amazing things. You know, when you think about the offshore industry, and that industry is shrinking because oil and gas seems to be moving in the wrong direction, and so. Why not retool that industry to take advantage of some of these new technologies that are becoming available, like the reuse of these offshore platforms?
And historically, there was always this impression that there was reluctance within the industry and to do so, but I don't get that sense today any longer. Do you?
No, not at all. Our organization is a member of the National Ocean Industries Association, and we abbreviate it NOIA, and up in Washington, D.C. And its members are made up by many of the oil and gas companies, and that organization is very supportive of the new technologies, renewable energy. So even you see it with the major oil and gas companies, they have really shifted their position to be accepting of all these different opportunities for energy. They're really becoming more energy companies as opposed to oil and gas companies.
Well, and it gets back to where we started, because they've already made a significant investment in infrastructure on so many different fronts, and they recognize that they have the capability of repurposing same and moving to these alternative fuel sources easier and they're a lot more nimble than startups would be, right?
That's exactly right. The potential is there. The service industry is there. It's ready to go, ready to move. We just completed some underwater inspections on some of the platforms that have been out there for as long as 25 or 30 years, and the underwater portion of the platforms is in very good condition. They were built very stout, and, you know, if they haven't gotten damaged by a hurricane, and some of them have, these platforms can potentially last indefinitely. They can certainly last for decades as we repurpose them.
Yeah. And obviously, as I said before, it helps facilitate moving from point A to point B. So what's next for you guys? You're meeting with your congressional delegation and – what do y'all hope to accomplish, and is there a timeline?
Well, as you know, the appropriations process is going on. They've got to complete that process this month and next month. And so we will be heading up to Washington, D.C. Next month. We've got several conversations going on right now with both members in the Senate and in the House. To set up those meetings, we hope to be doing some presentations there, And we're also going to be reaching out to the Department of Interior, both Bohm and Bessie, and hoping to set some good meetings up so that we can get this problem solved.
Absolutely. Final thoughts?
Well, I certainly appreciate the attention that you're placing on this, Newell, and I'll just give a plug. I will be speaking. I'll be one of the keynote speakers at the Offshore Technology Conference in Houston on August the 19th. So certainly invite any folks that have been to the Offshore Technology Conference to come and listen.
Absolutely. Well, we wish you the best of luck. Any way that we could retool and re-engineer this infrastructure to work to the benefit of the state, I'm my ears are wide open. My eyes are wide open. I hope that everyone else has that same attitude.
Absolutely. And I'll be glad to come back on your show if you'd like to have me again.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear if y'all have been able to achieve some of the goals that you have in the short term here. And it'd be interesting to see the reaction and hear the reaction from our congressional delegation and their willingness to help. Kent Satterley, Executive Director of the Gulf Offshore Research Institute, thank you so much for joining us, spending time with us this morning, and we certainly appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Newell.
All right, folks, we will be right back.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating, like coffee table dining, and an ice-cold Coke to cool down the heat. Today tastes like watching football is supposed to, and it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola, together tastes better.
Football season is here. That means it's time to load up on some delicious ice-cold Coke. Pick up Coca-Cola today.
500,000 businesses connect using Zoom. A single platform for video, phone, chat, and conference rooms. Zoom enables real-time collaboration no matter where your teams are. Global enterprises trust the easy-to-use, reliable, and secure Zoom platform to power high-performance teams. Empower your workforce with Zoom. Save 15% on meetings, chat, and phone with a Zoom United bundle. Visit zoom.com/bundle. Zoom, how the world connects.